Have you ever done the same thing? Have you ever created an event or an experience based solely on what's going on in your own mind? Whether it's past that you've had, let's say, a bad experience with a partner. And so anytime your current partner does something that triggers an emotion, maybe they look at you a certain way, and it's like, oh, every time I got looked at that way before, it meant a big argument was coming, or that they were going to hit me, or something. And so you actually create in the present the person's going to do or say or what they're thinking, and it may be the furthest thing from the truth, from actuality. You have a reality going on that's only between your ears. And then there is the actuality, what's really going on outside. And so we'll give Michael just a few moments to get dialed in, and I'll open the floor. Is there anything that someone would like to share? Have you ever been there? Have you ever done that? Or based on what you thought you heard, I'll give you an example. This was back, oh, it's been multiple years ago. And we were getting ready to travel. We were at Heartland. We had just gotten a new Sprinter, and we were loading it. And I asked Michael where he wanted something put in the van. And what he said was, put it wherever you think because it's more important to you than me. And what I heard, what he was saying was that where things were organized and put up was more important to me because I'm very organized, very OCD. But what I heard was that the van was more important to me than he was to me. And so it was just a shift in my mind of where the emphasis was on the words. And I was so angry that he would even think that the van would be more important than he was. And it took, I don't remember, it was like a day or two before it actually sunk in what he said. And it was like, oh my gosh, I created all this drama and trauma based on what I heard, what I thought I heard. And it was just twisted on some past experience I had had with someone else. And I overlaid the current event with my own thought and created my own upset. I mean, everything that was going on in actuality was totally different than what was going on in my reality. And when I finally saw that, it was like, oh my gosh, how could I have even thought that he said that? But so it can be little things. And we twist it based on what we think is really going on. And it's only what's really going on in our head. And so forgiveness is how do we change those things that are going on in our head? How do we let go of the fears and the stresses and the griefs and the pains and the anger and all of those things which we create on our own? And that's what this work is about, is how to go inside and how to change what's going on inside. I often use the example of the story in the scriptures where it says that there was this big storm going on and the disciples were in a boat and they saw Yeshua, Jesus, walking on water. And Peter's like, oh, if you tell me to step out and come to you, I know I can walk on water. And so Jesus is like, okay, come on. And as long as he's paying attention to where he's going and what he's doing, he steps out and he walks on water. Now, there has been nothing changed in the storm. The wind is still blowing. The waves are still rocking. Everything that created so-called, quote unquote, their fear, that all is still happening. He's now walking on water, and that has the circumstance has nothing to do with his ability. But then he starts looking at the circumstance and he sinks. We all have storms going on in our life. They may be little small things, they may be what we would consider big things, and they're just storms. And it's up to us whether we walk on water or whether we sink. So we can walk above the storm. It can still go on and still to be doing its thing, and we can be at peace and walk on top of it. Or we can look at the circumstance and we can fall back into it and we can sink. So, what storm is going on in your life? And are you sinking or are you walking on water? Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Very well said. Right on track. And You know, there's a powerful song out there that speaks about a gimmick as you walk through a storm. Hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm, there's a golden light. And when we realize that we can be in the light and function as the light, or we can be on the darkness and function as the darkness. And, you know, it all goes back to a basic principle that Yeshua put forward about the fact that we are creators. And he says, let thine eye be single, and thy body will be filled with light. If you talk to a modern-day physicist, they'll tell you that what we call matter is light energy solidified. So here's this physicist, 2,000 years ago, Yeshua, who says, if your focus is on one piece of mind energy, either fear or connecting this to love, then your creative process must follow suit. And we tie that in with something we talked about yesterday, the opening words in the book of John that were told by the Greeks, say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And in Aramaic, it doesn't say that at all. It says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. So we now have exact instructions on how the creative process works. Focus your mind on one piece of mind energy, fear or love, and you get to play out that dynamic in your creative process. I was thinking about our conversation yesterday, and I don't know if Cecilia's there today, but that was powerful, Cecilia. And another piece of the puzzle to look at to tie in here is to look at the power person dynamic. And I know with you're doing the self-study intensive, you're going to be coming across it. That's going to be coming up as you go through that material. But just to give a highlight to it, how does the power person dynamic work? And my offering is, this is absolutely what runs the world. I don't care how highfalutin, you know, somebody with a dozen different degrees has, you know, has their name in lights. This is what runs the world. And it is the power person dynamic. And I don't care whether you're in church, or you're in the corporation, or you're in the government, or you're in the family, or you're in the neighborhood, or the club, or whatever it is. Here's the bottom line. Three things happen, usually to a child, though it doesn't need to be a child. I've seen it happen with adults. And those three things are that there's someone who has more power over another person's life than that individual does. Again, usually a child. So maybe it's a child of three. And usually, again, though not always, it's a parent. So if a parent has more power over the child of three's life, that's one strike for creating a power person dynamic. The second one is, if that person who has the power is not functioning as a human being. That is, they are not functioning as and out of love. And then the third leg of that stool is that if the individual who's the object of that power perceives the situation as a survival situation, they move into a receptivity mode for this power person dynamic. Literally, their energy field, and in the context of our conversation yesterday, their whole nervous system is wide open. And very much like a sponge, they will suck in all the energy in the environment. And the energy, you know, a power person who's raging, screaming, you know, wildly crazy, exuding a tremendous force, tremendous energy force, that if the child has an open field and is just drawing that energy in, at any time in the future, that circumstances are presented that are similar to that circumstance with the power person, that energy that's been absorbed will open and will simply puke out of one's mouth. And the power person dynamic is the root of all disease. Literally, I'm talking about physiological diseases, mental diseases, emotional diseases, financial diseases, relationship diseases. This is the root of all disease. And unconsciously, we will be drawn to engage that energy and engage others who are in resonance with that energy. In other words, we'll tend to be drawn into relationships with people who have matching bags of garbage. And my offering is the reason we're drawn to that is because unconsciously we know that that energy has to, and that energy dynamic needs to be opened in order to be healed. And when we find someone who can resonate that dynamic in us, unfortunately, because most people don't have tools, their lives will simply go blotto unconscious in that energy. Because when a power person dynamic has been installed in the mind, in the future, relative to whatever the issue is that went on with the power person, there will only ever be three possible behaviors for the individual who was the subject of that power person dynamic, the child in this case. The level of stress that an individual is under will determine which one of three possible behaviors the mind, the automatic decision system in that individual, will select. Now, I very carefully don't say the word choose because there's no choice involved. It's pure resonance. Whatever's firing at the highest level, and remember, resonance is a dynamic of energy exchange. You know, think about, you know, remember you were in physics class in high school, and the teacher stood up there and hit a middle C tuning fork on the table and put it near a second tuning fork. And that second tuning fork started to vibrate. Why? Because there's a matching atomic magnetic structure between the two tuning forks. Now, if I had a middle C tuning fork in my hand and somebody came along with a middle A tuning fork and stuck it on the desk, nothing would happen to my middle C tuning fork because there is no atomic magnetic resonance. There's no match of energy between them. But the person who hits the middle C tuning fork on the desk and puts it close to the second tuning fork will find that the second tuning fork starts to vibrate. If I hold a deeply traumatic, high energy experience in my field, literally, because everything I hold is energy, and energy by definition is motion, and motion creates energy waves. Now, I'll never forget, this goes back 40 years ago, I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel came to the conference. Marcel was at that time was a 23-year senior scientist with IBM. He was the only non-degree, Marcel didn't have a degree. He was the only non-degree scientist that IBM had on their staff. Why didn't Marcel have a degree? Because nobody could teach him anything. He was a genius from the start. At the age of 11, Marcel invented and patented chemical light. So, kid of 11. You know, if you go to a football game and you buy a light stick and there's a glass tube inside of it and it's plastic, wrapped in plastic, you bend it and the glass tube breaks and the chemicals mix and it turns to light. That was Marcel's invention at the age of 11. Now, his family didn't have money. So this 11-year-old child patented his invention. That's kind of mind Marcel had. If you have a computer, stop and say a prayer. You know, Marcel's left his body now. And send him a thank you. Because he's the man who invented the magnetic coating for IBM that allows your hard drive to store information. If it weren't for Marcel, we wouldn't have hard drives like we have today. So Marcel came to the Global Science Conference. And he presented a thing called a Delaware camera. Now, the Delaware camera is a camera that works differently than your average light-based camera. You know, when you click the shutter on your camera, the aperture opens, it lets a certain amount of light in. That light registers on the photographic plate, you develop it, and you get a picture. But that's not how the Delaware camera works. Between the light source and the photographic plate in the Delaware camera, there's a tuning mechanism, much like a radio tuner. So you can attune it to different frequencies. Here's the point of the story. Here's what Marcel brought to the conference. He showed us the pictures of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. He could take a picture, literally, of those high energy waves. So the person who's gone through this traumatic experience, their field has been open, their nervous system is just raw and open and just spun, like a sponge, drawing in everything that's in the environment, that's all energy. And that energy is in continuous motion. If it stopped, it wouldn't be energy, and the whole balance of the universe would be destroyed. So someone walking around with that unconscious, energetic experience of trauma is silently, energetically communicating 24/7, 365. I call it the creative wave or the psychic megaphone. And so the person who went through that, let's say that raging parent experience at the age of 3, is now 60. And they're walking down the street, you know, they're a successful business person and things are rocking in their lives, except that there's this nagging something. And no matter what, they're really not very happy. They do all kinds of crazy things, you know, a fifth of scotch every night, whatever, in order to be happy. They're drug addicts, whatever. He's walking down the street, and again, some raging person approaches him and assaults him. And he says, how do I get a copy of Michael Rice's book? Why is this happening to me again? How do I understand? I didn't say anything. I just had a nice dinner, and everything was quiet. I was just walking down the street. Why is this happening to me again? Here's why. The unresolved, emotionally traumatized energy is continuously radiating a resonating energy field that, like the middle C tuning fork, is going to cause a resonance in anybody else with the same frequency. And that person is going to be drawn into expression with him. Until he opens his field, until he accesses fully every bit of trauma energy from that 3-year-old experience, he's going to tend to draw that kind of trauma to his life. And when he does resolve that 3-year-old experience, when he does open his nervous system, when he does move out of that sympathetic dominant state into the parasympathetic state, he's in a thrive place, and he opens and he's able to embrace that horrific experience that happened, then, now that he's stepped in and started doing his work, he's going to probably start to move to the next level and become a true good ancestor. Remember, I talked about Marcel Vogel, or pardon me, not Marcel in this case, Jonas Salk. He said the most important thing you can do is to be a good ancestor. And so what's this guy going to do if he really digs in and starts to do his work? He's going to start to access the genetic memory of the father who was the rager that impaled his energy field with this trauma energy. And he's going to open that, and he's going to go to the next level, and the next level, and the next level, remembering that, you know, his father being his power person, his father had a power person who had a power person who had a power person, and he's going to start to move through the generations of his bloodline and clean up his life and clean up the generational patterns. Remember that story about the Jews wandering in the desert? What did they say had to happen to get out of the desert? Now, was this a hot, sandy place? Was this an actual physical desert they were talking about? Well, if you check out the desert that they ostensibly got lost in, it's about 35 square miles. And obviously, these people are pretty bright and they know a whole lot about astronomy. And if they were lost in the desert, they know the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And what would they do if they wanted to get out of the desert? They'd wake up one morning, they'd pack their belongings, and they'd start walking west. 35 square miles, you can't be too far from the border. They're going to be out of the desert. It can't take 40 years. I mean, that's just silly. But that idea, that metaphor of the desert, is a code word for the unconscious. And that guy of 60 that I told you about, that's been through rage experience after rage experience. Remember, he met that wonderful woman, and she was so beautiful and so sweet. And for the until the honeymoon was over, they had this wonderful time. And then, in rage and drunken stupors, he would hit and strike and abuse and beat and not have any idea. And after he sobered up, he'd go, "Oh my God, what have I done? I'm so sorry. I will never do that again." So the next time he gets drunk, and that trauma energy is resonated, and he has to select one of three behaviors. And the level of behavior, or the behavior that his mind will select, will be related to the level of sweat, stress he's under. So with this beautiful, wonderful woman that he says he cherishes so deeply, when there's no stress, he is Mr. Nice Guy. He is just a gentleman, charming, cherishing. Everything is awesome. But then when stress starts to build, he stops doing that charming stuff, which is the way that he got along with his power person. No stress. The automatic decision system causes the mind to do whatever it is we did to get along with our power person. But then when stress starts to build, a new behavior will appear that perhaps this woman he's in relationship with has never seen. And this new behavior will be that of what he did to resist and survive with his power person. So maybe what he did to resist and survive with his power person is he became very snarky and nasty. So all of a sudden, Mr. Nice Guy becomes Mr. Nasty, and they say the honeymoon is over. Boy, we've got work to do in this marriage. And then the third level of stress, that is, he is ultra stressed. His automatic decision system will force him into the root of that experience in his nervous system. And all the rage that poured out of his power person's mouth will pour out of his mouth. And along with it, the fists that his father's used to beat his head in will find him beating his wife. And that's as sure a pattern as night follows day. Now, I can remember Jeannie and I were in South Florida. This probably goes back, I don't know, 14, 15 years ago, sweetie, if you remember. We were doing a conference for a gentleman who had an online AA program that he had run for years. He'd been sober for about 30 years. He was probably in his 60s at this point. And I explained this dynamic of the power person. He came up to me after workshop, "Michael, I know that that isn't true because my father, when I was a kid, my father beat me mercilessly, and certainly I hated it, and I never, ever hit my son." And he was kind of in a defiant sort of posture of, "So that's just not true." I said, "Well, let me ask. I acknowledge you for having enough control of yourself to never hit your son. But tell me, still today, how much time do you spend having to control your fist?" I could have knocked him over with a feather. He said, "That's my constant struggle to keep from hitting people." Yeah. That's your power person dynamic. Now, maybe you were able to resist doing that with your son. Congratulations, your son is blessed. Although, go talk to your son and find out that some of the same dynamics are in him that are in you that are unresolved in regard to your power person. Because if you are your son's power person, those dynamics are still there being beaten and raged at, even though you never raised a finger, because you got to be in the energy field of that unresolved rage and pain. And it has passed from generation to generation, and he received it in his genes just like you received it in your genes from your father. And now if you go to work, you will truly become a good ancestor, and you'll start cleaning out your genes. You'll start cleaning out the dynamics. You'll start facing every terror, every trauma, every fear, every beating, every rage, every sadness, every grief, every criticism, every put down. Instead of responding with the power person's hostility or fear, you'll stop. You'll take a breath. And when you do, you'll apply forgiveness and you'll start to remove those dynamics that are deeply embedded in your unconscious, in your nervous system. And then you will be led to tools. You'll be taught and you'll learn and your intuition will teach you. And the final step will happen in your healing when that power that is within you, that is the only and true master teacher, will guide you on how to heal those final energetic dynamics that have been going on perhaps for 1,000 generations in your bloodline. We're here to be part of delivering those tools, to make them available. And of course, by delivering them, we get to learn them. I love what Richard Bach says. We teach best that which we most need to learn. So as you listen, you hear what it is that we need to learn, because we're on the path for learning it. And we're doing our best to incorporate it, embody it, practice it, and make it available and make the support available to others. So that together we can change the unconscious dynamics of 1,000 generations of our bloodline. You look back through the history of humanity, and this touches every one of us. The rages, the pains, the traumas, the insanities. You know, in the last 75 years, we've murdered in this world 175 million people in war. And you'll notice the unconscious dynamics are starting to come out now within our own country, with our own countrymen, as that unconscious rage and that unconscious pain is brought forward. We will keep manifesting that until a critical mass of people say, ah, I got it. I don't have to live in the desert anymore. My 40 years are up. Oh, here's that rage of my mother. Here's that pain of my father. Here's that trauma of my big sister who was my power person. And now I'm going to step in, and as the Native Americans were wont to say, I'll say to myself, Matakwiasin, which in the Native American culture was a sort of a prayer statement that was offered when people went into a sweat lodge or a healing ceremony of any kind. Matakwiasin meant for all my relations. We are stepping in to do this work for all of our relations, to put an end to this insanity of hostility and fear, and open the space for our nervous systems, and this is called the parasympathetic dominant state, to actually have a space to bring in the true state of being that we are as love, to bring that new, you know, you've heard me ask the question so many times, have you ever held a newborn? Go back and tap into the energy of the newborn. And notice when you tap into the energy of the newborn and you recognize them as love, that the newborn is not loving you, but the newborn is love. The parasympathetic state is a state where the nervous system is open and receptive to thrive and to receive light directly, to receive the active presence of love fully within it and incarnate it within every cell and flush out of every cell the hostilities and fears of the generations. It's not an easy piece of work to do. You know, when you look at how long this insanity has been going on in the earth, for people to come out of the darkness, come out of the hostility and fear-based mind, Now imagine walking up to someone who's in the middle of a huge, raging political argument over what's going on, you know, without getting into details, what's going on in the culture today, and they're raging over it. Imagine walking up to those two people and offering to each one of them, how would you like to take a breath and tap into the presence of love? What would you heal? How many times have you played this argument out with how many people? Yeah, you think it's about politics. It's got nothing to do with politics. It's your own unconscious dynamics. Yeah, you think it's about your relationship with your wife or your husband. It's not about your relationship with your wife or your husband. It's about your own unconscious dynamics. Yeah, you think it's about that guy who ripped you off for all that money and that's why you're enraged. No, because of your own unconscious dynamics. We're here to change the conversation and to support each person shifting it out of the nervous system that blocks anything to do with thriving and keeps people in survival, and opening up that nervous system to be receptive to incarnating conscious, active, present love. And when that happens, a whole different creative process operates. And according to Yeshua, the originator of these principles, the physicist, physiologist, psychologist, geneticist, who understood this and taught it in Aramaic 2,000 years ago, he said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. He was talking about critical mass in physics when he said that. He wasn't talking about bread. He was saying, it's only going to take a small number of people who choose to literally bring heaven to earth, bring the active presence of love. Remember in Aramaic, the words, the kingdom of heaven, as the Greeks translated it, in Aramaic means the community of love. It's only going to take a small number of people who choose to enter the community of love. And not everybody's interested. I mean, everybody's interested in doing that. You hear about it until you tell them the work that needs to be done. Oh, wait a minute. I need to open my unconscious and deal with all the gunk and the garbage and the rage and the hatred and the vengeance and the suffering and the loss and the death and the trauma of all my generation. You want me to? You're crazy. Oh, yeah, I want to do it. But you think I'm going to actually open and start to look at that crap? No, it takes a special breed. It takes a special breed that has the brain cells to say, okay, Matakwiasan, I'm going to do the work for all my relations, and I'm going to stick around the teaching long enough. I'm going to engage it deeply enough to actually allow my nervous system to open its deepest trauma and pain, be it mine or an ancestral pain. I'm going to bring it forward in the presence of active love and allow it to be dissolved. I can think back to a time about 30 years ago. I was 20 or so years into doing this work and had seen some magnificent healing take place. And I'm pondering and I'm asking myself the question, why? Gee, there were 30 people in the room. Why did this one heal and that one didn't? Why did this person who had this horrible traumatic disease that had gone on all their lives, all of a sudden that day it ended? And the 29 other people in the room went on with their diseases. One person had prepared and done the work. Remember the story of the woman who had the issue of blood? There's a throng of people around Yeshua. And she knows. She's prepared. She's been doing her work. She's been building the brain cells. She's at the place where she knows she needs some very powerful support. And if she can do it, that last piece of work that she doesn't have the vitality to do on her own, she can get the support by touching the hem of his garment. And we're not talking about her touching a piece of cloth. We're talking about her stepping into his energy field and being empowered by the presence of his active love. And literally, she ends a 12-year severe disease process, physical disease process, ends that instant. Now, we're told in that particular story there was a whole throng around Yeshua. I don't know how many people are in a throng. Are there 2 or 10 or 2,000? I don't know. Maybe it was the 5,000. Whoever it was, one out of all of them healed. One was ready to do the piece of work that was required to get rid of a severe physical disease. There's a poem we use. It goes like this. Tell me the weight of a snowflake, a hawk asked a wild dove. Nothing, more than nothing, was the answer. The hawk then said, I must tell you a marvelous story. I sat on the branch of a fir, and it began to snow. Not heavily, not a raging blizzard, just like in a dream without any violence. As I sat on the branch, I counted the snowflakes falling on the twigs of my branch. Their number was exactly 3,741,942. When the next snowflake, nothing more than nothing, as you say, fell on the branch. And as that snowflake fell on the branch broke off. The hawk flew away. The dove, an expert on peace, thought about the story for a while and finally said to himself, perhaps only one person's voice is lacking for peace to come about in the world. Will you be that critical mass person, the leavening that leavens the whole loaf? I don't know. You might be. Are you ready to step in and do the work that it takes? It's not a pleasant work. Its rewards are absolutely awesome. But it can be tough. It can be painful. And to do it, you have to remember to breathe. It's a key part of the process. So this experience 30 years ago, and I asked, what is it? What causes one person to heal and another one doesn't? And what became clear to me, the answer that I got, was that two things have to occur for healing to happen. One, the energy that has been hidden in the unconscious, in the nervous system to date, is going to have to come to the surface and make an appearance. That means it might be pretty nasty. Two, present in that space must be conscious, active, present love. If love is conscious, active, and present, talk about that story of the woman with the issue of blood. Yeshua is the presence of conscious love. She knows she just needs to get close enough to that presence of love, and that will vitalize her sufficiently that she can let go of this power person dynamic that's been residing in her womb and creating such trauma for 12 years. Am I willing to do the work? Am I willing to do the preparation? You know, again, how many are in a throng? Was it maybe the 5,000? So one person out of 5,000 healed in that, in the power of his presence? One person, their field was open enough that they were ready to embrace whatever was in their hearts, their unconscious that needed to be cleaned out? Takes prepping oneself and doing the work. It takes building the brain cells to recognize what is happening when the healing process opens and moves. It requires breathing to he oftentimes says, oh, Michael, I can hear you breathing through your microphone. Yeah, well, that's what I'm here to do, breathe. So I breathe with you, and I invite you to become willing to open your nervous system and find whatever's there. Touch whatever's there. Soften into whatever's there. And free yourself. If there's pain somewhere in your structure, that place where there's pain is where the energy of trauma is stored, or where the energy blockage is that would otherwise allow that thriving, awesome energy to move through. So you want to focus. You know, basically, your body is your hard drive. It stores everything from every generation. Literally, the storage capacity of one single human form is beyond even the greatest massing of Cray computers. You could put all the Cray computers in the world, the big giant supercomputers together. You wouldn't have the ability to store the information that one human form has. And unfortunately, some of what's been stored is pretty traumatic and never belongs in the structure. And so it's the healing of those dynamics that this work is about. And the chapter that we're on in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is a chapter on healing abuse and victimhood. So let's turn to it. If you are, if you've been following along, you want to read with us, we're on the top of page 93 in the chapter on healing abuse and victimhood. We've been talking to Richard about the fact that there are no victims. If you want to, quote unquote, become the victim of a perpetrator of crime, just carry the energy of trauma of that crime, and guess who's going to show up in your life? The person who's in residence. You don't have to send an engraved invitation. The invitation's been sent by the simple fact that you hold that issue. So the way we volunteer for victimhood and trauma, loss, deprivation, disease, suffering, financial discord, relational issues, is we hold an energy unresolved. So I'm offering in response to Richard realizing how he'd played on his victimhood, I offer the thought, again, we're at the top of page 94. I believe love is the most powerful force on earth. It seems one of the benefits of giving up anger, sadness, blame, and guilt, and letting go of my ball and chain is regaining my power. Is that it? Does this mean the choices I make are the key? Richard asks. Is that it? Is that the key? That was actually, I misread that. That was a statement that Richard made, and my answer to him is, that's right. And the new choices you've been making today are grounding you in your power, I offered. He comes back and says, then you're saying that the power I lost playing the victim becomes available to me to consciously recreate my life? He says, to think about every part of me being aligned with and creating out of love, it's pretty exciting stuff. And I offer him the thought, yes, and it takes work. It is not an event that happens in a single moment, but a process that results from being responsible for what you set up in your life. Notice, Richard, that the truth is safe and healing. Now that you're aware of behavior patterns that don't serve you, you are in the position to change them. That's empowerment. And we are here to help every human being on the planet to uncover the empowerment that lies within them. Empowerment doesn't come from outside of you. It's yours. It's always been yours. If it's been covered up, and for most people, you know, generations and generations it's been covered up. The use of the tools uncovers that empowerment. It is yours. It is always your power. But when we deny something, when we pretend that something we're going through again is not ours, that it's somebody else's fault, we actually hide our power in our brain's image of them. When we collapse the perceptual construct that our mind generates out of hiding our power in our brain's image of them and playing the victim, when we collapse that perception, it loses the power that was ours from the beginning to come back to be available for conscious use. That's what we're here to do. I hope that makes sense.